Hey guys, it's Phil Cartlidge and you're tuned in to the Dynasty Hot Seat. Yes, hello everybody and welcome back once again to the Dynasty Hot Seat, the only Dynasty show out there that is a certified inferno. And today we're back, we got Phil on again, guys. Phil, the first guy on the show this year to go through a 2024 mock draft. He's back with an updated list. Phil, it's great to see you, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well, mate. Thanks for having me back. Feels like we're kind of bringing it full circle. So obviously the first time out was the way too early one, all the way back at the beginning of October. And now here we are, draft week, man. And, you know, let's have a look at what we know now compared to what we knew then and see how it affects that kind of mock draft.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into this and to see the differences between what we knew then and what we know now. But before we get into it, Phil, you just want to tell everybody, where can they find you these days? What kind of work are you up to? Obviously, you're part of the amazing Wildcard Devi team, right?
Yeah. So on X, obviously, at Wildcard Devi, college football never stops, recruiting never stops, Devi never stops, the same way Dynasty doesn't. We're just looking at it from that lens of college football and the NFL kind of landscape. Jack's done an amazing job in our absence kind of the last couple of weeks. He put a great show out there on looking at Campus to Canton leagues. If you've not checked it out, go and have a look. It was absolutely superb. And then obviously I had a spare Saturday and, you know, the devil makes light work for idle thumbs. And I just had this idea of, you know, I wanted to read a book and I looked at my bookshelf, like, and all my kind of American football books were red. And I was like, hey, I don't want to be spending 15, 20 quid on buying a new book. And with that, I had this idea of like, all right, what can we do? How could I swap books with other people out there that have probably got a bookcase full of American football literature? And that was it. Like all of a sudden, Read Options UK came up. And, you know, before we know it, it's snowballing out there on X. And, you know, we're facilitating swaps and trades for people just for the love of the game and for the love of a good book.
I mean, also, could not have picked a better name. Absolutely smashed it with the name Read Option. I think that's absolutely great. I love the idea of it. Just that incentive of, you know, not wasting things. You don't want things sitting there on the shelf. You've already looked at them. I think there's enough people that want to learn enough about it. And yeah, why waste things just to sit there whenever you can share the wealth and share all that knowledge? I think it's a brilliant idea. So if you've not already, check out that Read. Where is the exact address? Is it at Read Options? Not quite at Read Options, is it?
So it's Read Options under dash UK.
Read Options under dash UK. Make sure you go check that out, everybody. And we're going to get into this draft in just a second. But Phil, I've got a different first question for you compared to the other people I've had on the show. Because I've already asked you, what do you notice about this class? So I'm going to ask you something else instead. What has changed since October, all the way back? October, wasn't it? It was October since we did this first draft. Yeah. What has changed from October to now about your perceptions of this draft class?
Yeah, it's interesting. Some of the things that have stayed the same, first of all, I told you at the time, it gave me a little bit of a worry in my gut picking running backs in the first round. At the time, you know, we were a long way off and I slipped a couple of names in there because, you know, inevitably there will be people in your drafts that still need a running back and they don't look at value. They look at what they need positionally. Yeah. So it was worth introducing you to a couple of those running backs. And I think that's very much still the case. The running backs are not a bad bunch. I don't buy this that it's a down year. I just think that what it's missing is that top end superstar like we've been graced with in the last couple of years. I think there's a lot of guys who will make contributions, but perhaps just not at that elite level top end like we've kind of been spoiled with this last couple of seasons. We know it's deep for wide receivers, but the biggest change for me was just what we know now. And, guys, you know, the ever-shifting college world of nil and, you know, people deciding to go back to college and the transfer portal. There's several names you'll see that we had in that October mock that have decided to go back to school. And for that reason, you know, either boost their stock or injuries maybe stop them having the season they wanted to have. And they weren't going to get the draft capital they perhaps expected or wanted. So, you know, we pivot. Other people have taken a bump as a result. Obviously, there's guys that missed the cut first time completely who are in there now. And so, yeah, man, it's interesting times.
Yeah, let's roll right into it. And Phil, very helpfully, has made a couple of slides for us, actually. And look at that, some free advertising for the Fantasy Wildcard Devi Show as well. You're welcome, guys. Sitting up there as well for you. So, Phil, let's talk through this. As I mentioned, 23rd of October 2023, we did this. We're now in April 2024. So you kicked things off, unsurprisingly, in the Superflex mock with Caleb Williams. You're sticking with Caleb Williams. I mean, none of the rumblings about how crazy his dad is or anything, none of that gets, you know.
Not for me. Like, absolutely no change there. No change needed. I wrote a piece a short while ago for Substack for the guys over at Brit Towers, and I said, look, just cut through the noise, cut through silly season, and just focus on the prospect himself. Look at his tape, look at what he's put out there. And, you know, there's no doubt about it for me. The guy has the potential to go straight in. I mean, he's already been in startup drafts. You know, he's looking like a top 10 dynasty QB already, and he's not even stepped foot on the field. I've got no doubt that in the right system, looking like Chicago, they've surrounded him with weapons and targets. I think he's just going to be absolutely fine. He's walking into a great situation. And isn't it just frightening to think, like, had somebody had the forethought to do this for Justin Fields 4 years ago, they might not be in this situation now.
Yeah, I mean, it shows you how much they really believed in Justin Fields. I think whenever you see, whenever they're actually putting all the chips in and going for it, you get people in like Keenan Allen to go along with the all, and DeAndre Swift as well, I think they've brought in too. So he's got a ton of weapons, and DJ Moore coming off a great season, Cole Kmet, a sneaky good player as well. Caleb Williams, if he doesn't succeed right away, I don't think you can really blame the Bears for lack of trying here, because they've really surrounded him with a lot of great talent. So I'm right with you there with Caleb at 1-1. And right after, hey, look, no change here either. It is Superflex. You did mention back in October, you mentioned how, you know, some people might have an issue with Marvin Harrison Jr. in Superflex because he's not a quarterback, but I don't think anyone's mad at taking Marvin Harrison Jr. at 2, even now.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, the positional value of the quarterback in Superflex is massive, and that might be the only thing that changes this. But you just can't ignore the potential unicorn in the room. You know, if he's got all the makings of a genuine superstar. And at that point, you're the 102 for a reason. Yeah, your team probably needs a lot of work. Who says it has to be quarterback first? Why can't you get this guy and lock him in for the next 10 years plus? And then build from there.
Do you see any team going crazy in the draft and really aggressively trying to go up and get him, or do you think he's fairly certainly going to the Cardinals?
Funnily enough, I was talking about this with a couple of lads in one of the UK Ravens group chats earlier, and the sensible thing in this class says the Patriots at 3 don't have to go anywhere. And with the quarterbacks available, this should go quarterback. But I look at the state of their roster. I look at the state of their depth chart and just say, are they, for me, they're in the polar opposite position of Chicago to bring a QB in and have him be successful straight away. They've got nothing. Their entire offense is a shambles. Void of skill player talent. The offensive line is wobbly at best, you know, kind of held together by Cole Strange and Michael Onwenu. And I just feel like they could take any skill player at the 103 and improve their situation and wait another year for a quarterback, because to me, they're just not ready. But otherwise, I think it's a lock that he goes to Arizona at 4.
Does that change anything for you if Marvin Harrison does go to the Patriots with Jacoby Brissett throwing him the ball? Does that change it if, say, like, Malik Nabers goes to the Chargers with Justin Herbert throwing on the ball. Does that change anything for you with Marvin Harrison?
Nah, because he's going to be a target hog. He's going to be the only person that gets those targets, and the workload should see him through, even if it isn't like the amazing production you want straight away in terms of scoring. He's going to get any PPR targets, and like I said, he'll win. He will win. He's that good.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. He is absolutely that good. And hey, the first change. Back in October, you had Drake May going at the 103. It's now Jaden Daniels. Talk to me, Phil. Why the move? Why bump Jaden Daniels all the way up? Of course, the season was not finished whenever we were chatting back in October. So what did Jaden Daniels do between October and now to bump him up?
Yeah, I mean, it's mad, isn't it? Like, last time we did two full rounds and Jaden Daniels didn't make the cut. Full stop. And we had a conversation about why. And the argument at the time was, well, listen, he started like a house on fire, but we'd not seen it when he was at Arizona State. Yes, there were signs of progress at LSU, but how good was he? Was it a kind of circumstance of the schedule? I just said I needed more. Well, my God, he showed out. It got better and better as the season went on. The second half of the schedule, he was putting up, I've heard you refer to it as video game numbers, and I completely agree. Yeah. It was like playing Madden on rookie mode, wasn't it? He just went absolutely bananas. There's games where you're looking at it going, hang on, he passed for that many yards and that many. And he ran for that. That's not all in what. Yeah. Right. Okay. Listen, for me in fantasy, I think his upside and his ceiling is superb. Do I think he's the safest play immediately? No. But the upside is there. And with that skill set, if he lands in the right situation, what's to stop him making a push at the QB1 overall with that skill set?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same as like the chats we had about Anthony Richardson last year. He has the tools available, that rushing ability there to be that quarterback one overall in terms of like a scoring finish, whether he ever gets to, you know, dynasty running back one or running back, was that sort of a Freudian slip there with running back, quarterback one overall. You know, maybe he doesn't have that longevity, but yeah, he's someone that can score you an absolute metric ton of points. So for you, was this more Jaden Daniels emerging rather than Drake May falling off?
Absolutely. And you'll see, we've not got long to wait for Drake May's name to be called. But I just think, again, at the 103, you're in that position because you are void of talent at that position. So swing for upside.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go from 103 to 104. And back in October, we had Brock Bowers in there at 104. And yeah, you're right. We don't have to wait long for Drake May. He's at the 104. So still, you know, you're still in on Drake May for sure, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And there's a couple of drafts coming up where I've got the number four slot. And if he falls to me at four, I am absolutely delighted. He's about as safe a 104 as you can get. The floor is high. And so is the ceiling. People keep talking about him as being the safe prospect, but he's actually really athletic. Like when he tucks the ball and runs, like, you know, he's coming at you. And he's a big guy. You know, he's going to be good. I've got absolutely no doubt about it. He just seems to, because of the huge kind of surge in Jaden Daniels' performance, all the conversations about Caleb Williams, he just kind of seems like the forgotten guy. It's just not trendy to like Drake May at the moment, but I'm cool with not being trendy.
Yeah, absolutely. And Drake May, yeah, you're right. I've said it before, just even a few weeks ago on this very show, I said Drake May seems to be the guy at the minute in this draft that is suffering from prospect fatigue more than anybody else. Would you agree with that?
Without a doubt. And isn't it funny, like, the lazy player comps to years gone past, like, people are comping him to Justin Herbert, but Justin Herbert had exactly the same thing. He was completely just overlooked, and everyone was talking about all the other guys, and then he's come in and been an absolute stud. And I can see no reason that Drake May won't do the same.
Yeah, on the Wildcards Dynasty show a couple of weeks ago, I read out Justin Herbert's draft prospect from, I think it was from Mel Kiper, sounds exactly like Drake May, almost word for word. It's crazy. Yeah, so he's someone to definitely keep an interesting thought about Drake May, actually. Where would you rank him right now in terms of dynasty quarterbacks that are out there. So is he someone right now that you're looking maybe slightly ahead of, like a Tua Tagovailoa, or is he around that range or way ahead?
That is the sweet spot. I think you've got a cutoff kind of after Dak, where there's a big tier drop. Scrap that, because I'd still take Trevor Lawrence, I think. But then you've kind of got around Tua before you get to your safe, steady managers like your Jared Goff. So I think Drake May just kind of slots in around there, around that kind of Tua Goff level.
Yeah, that's exactly where I've got him too. So let's see who's sitting at 1-5. And no change for you. It's Malik Nabers out of LSU. I mean, we laxed lyrical about him last time, but what have you seen even from October till now and the rest of that college season? What else did Nabers show you that you were impressed with?
I think just consistency, the ability to strike from anywhere. You know, he's fast. I mean, let's be honest, he'd be the wide receiver one in most classes, hands down. And, you know, he's got speed, yards after catch. He's a home run threat from anywhere on the field. And plug him in, watch him go. Don't ask him to do too much that he's not comfortable with. Just stick to what he's good at, and he'll be lightning in a bottle. He's somebody that, yeah, you mentioned it already. Like, what if he went to the Chargers? That would be a hell of a fit.
Yeah, I'd love to see him going there. I think the Chargers are going to break everybody's hearts at 5, though. I think they're going to take someone like Joe Alt, just looking at who Harbaugh is. But I would love to see it, but I'm sort of apprehensive. For you, though, Nabers, like Harrison, are you thinking, don't really care where he goes?
He's one that I wouldn't want at the Patriots. Like, not that I can see the Patriots going for him at 3, but if the Patriots, say, traded back and let someone come in for a quarterback, I wouldn't want him to go there. And God forbid, we keep talking about him going to the Chargers, like, as a great situation. I don't want him to be a Giant either. That's seriously knocking, like, where he's going to be and what he contributes immediately. But no doubt about it, like, long-term, he's going to be sound.
Yeah, absolutely agreed with you. I think what brilliant, brilliant value at the 105 to get someone like a Malik Nabers is absolutely great. So, moving on to the 1-6. Now, you had Trayvon Henderson in there at 1-6. He is no longer even coming to play in the NFL next year. He's going to be the RB2 over at Ohio State behind Quinshon Judkins.
That's it.
You've decided to sub in Brock Bowers here at the 106. Talk to me about Brock Bowers and what makes him so special. Even in a class full of special players, Brock Bowers still stands out.
Yeah, like, considering he's supposed to be undersized and considering he's not supposed to be that kind of profile tight end, watch him block. Like, and I know that's not the sexy bit, that's not the bit that scores fantasy points, but it's the bit that gets tight ends on the field every single down. And he blocks with the best of them. Like, he's fierce. And then just the way he moves, like, cuts like a wide receiver. He'll do all the dirty work between the hashes. He's just so quick and decisive. He's a treat to watch. And I really, really happy I broke my rule for drafting Devy tight ends. And I've got him in a couple of places coming into leagues. And I'm so excited because they're going to use him like a wide receiver. Wherever he goes, he's like having an extra wide receiver on the field as well. And yeah, he's going to be money. He's going to be money. I just wonder. You could make an argument. I had him at 4 in that last one and 6 in this one. Mm. You can flick these guys around 4, 5, 6, dependent on what you need and not feel too bad about it. I just feel like the quarterbacks have kind of got that bit more value over the wide receiver and the tight end, which is why I've put it how I have. But they're elite prospects. And, you know, they're going to win you games. If you end up with one of those at 4, 5, or 6, you're laughing in any order you take him.
He's so good that the only real time I've ever seen this happen before was actually with, you know, just last year with Bijan Robinson, where people were saying Bijan was the running back 1 before he even played in the NFL. A lot of people saying Brock Bowers is already the tight end 1 overall in Dynasty before he's even played in the NFL. And while that's maybe a bit of an extreme statement, you can't say you don't see why people are saying it either, right?
No, without a doubt. I mean, look, right now everyone's high on Sam Laporta. Sam Laporta is going mid to late second in most startups in a tight end premium draft. And, you know, I'm not here to knock Sam Laporta at all. I think he was an absolute revelation last year. But his stats were boosted by 10 touchdowns. You know, he's still going to compete with Amon-Ra for targets. And what's to say the Lions don't go and look to add another weapon this year? They're in a position that seems to be in a sensible range to do so. Like, there's nothing to say that Laporta will hit those heights again. I mean, I sincerely hope he does. But Bowers will be walking into a situation where he already does a little bit of everything. And you've seen it. You've seen it. One of the reasons, another one of my favorites in this draft class, Ladd McConkey, could get open as much as he could in that Georgia team was because it was the tight end in Bowers who was taking the double teams.
You know?
Absolutely. And they still couldn't stop him.
Exactly, yeah. So it's kind of like, and the thing you kind of touched on it earlier, the thing about, oh, his size. It's like, well, Bowers has been playing now in that Georgia team for not just this year. It's not like he's just had 1 year. He's had a couple of years in that Georgia team playing against and doing incredibly well against what are now NFL corners, safeties, linebackers. So if the size wasn't an issue then, I don't see why it's going to be an issue all of a sudden when he gets to the NFL. And it's also not like he can't get bigger either.
Exactly. But I think if he piles too much on, you lose the bit that makes him really special, and that's the elite speed for a tight end. But yeah, you're right. And he holds his own in blocking. Like I say, watch him block, and he's no slouch.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we move on to 107, guys, we're about 20 minutes into this video. If you made it this far, hey, how about hitting that like and hitting that subscribe button if you're enjoying the video? If you're not enjoying it, keep that to yourself. Let's move on to pick number 7. Now here we see again, Emeka Egbuka was your choice back in October. He is going back to Ohio State. Actually, Phil, we discussed then, and we thought maybe the best idea for him would be to go back to Ohio State. So I think he has made a good decision going back there. So you've gone in, you've replaced him with Rome Odunze out of Washington. I just love Rome Odunze. I think he's absolutely brilliant. Talk to me about him.
Yeah, so Rome Odunze's season this season was everything we'd hoped Emeka Egbuka's season would be. He played as an alpha wide receiver in a talented group, a similar situation at Washington to what it was at Ohio State, some elite wide receivers in that wide receiver room. And he led the show. And he just makes everything. I wrote some notes for myself earlier, and I tried to go with the whole alliteration. I've gone with the three C's: consistent, clutch, and cool. He makes everything look so effortless. He glides. The way he eats up the cushion against the corners, like, he just glides and eats that space up. His cuts are effortless. Like, the way he dips his hips and moves, it's an absolute treat to watch. And again, somebody's going to get an absolute steal getting him here in their drafts. It's a lovely, lovely spot to have, because I think the other names that we've already gone through, like that kind of first 7, even first 8 now in a moment, are kind of almost set in stone. It's just what order you want them. And I think Odunze is the one that's going to get shifted to the bottom of the pile. And you watch the tape sometimes and why is he the one that's been shifted to the bottom? I don't think it's a push or an outlandish statement to say he's closer to Neighbors than Neighbors is to Harrison. For me, I like him that much.
Yeah, for me, I've got Marvin Harrison in like a tier on his own for these wide receivers. I think I maybe just have Neighbors in like his own tier as well, and then Odunze in his own tier as well. But you're right, I think there's the sort of distinctive layers between those guys. I just love about Odunze, he kind of gets pigeonholed as maybe like a big guy when if you watch him play, but actually really smooth at running his routes. I just loved how he was able to get open in the end zone as well. I thought that was just an incredible talent of his. So hopefully that'll translate over to the NFL. And he's another guy. I mean, Patriots, obviously, I'd be shocked if he ended up at the Patriots at that high. But yeah, he's not someone I'm worried about where he lands. I think he's going to do just fine. I wouldn't even be shocked, Phil, if in the NFL draft he ends up going ahead of Malik Nabers.
Very possible. I was going to say, what do you think to like the kind of internet sweeps in rumors at the moment of Caleb at 1 for the Bears and Adunze at 9?
Would that be? I mean, what a offensive force that would be. DJ Moore, and then you've got Romo Dunze, and then you've also brought in Keenan Allen as well. That would be. I mean, I've seen Romo Dunze compared to Keenan Allen before, even.
Yeah,
I think having both of those guys on the field, that would be. I mean, then that would be so good that Caleb Williams' stock would rise even if he goes. That's how good he is. Caleb Williams' stock already really high. If Dunze goes and joins him, it would even bring his stock up. So I love that for the Bears. I don't know if I love that for Romo Dunze. I'm not going to lie, for his fantasy production, his target is not going to be huge there, but I still think I would take him around here anyway, just because, you know, Keenan Allen a little bit older, and I just trust Romo Dunze to get the job done eventually too. Yeah, so going from 1-7 into pick number 8. Back in October, you had Braylon Allen, who I'm still convinced looks like a Ninja Turtle, in at number 8. And now you've swapped him in for, I mean, just this guy that sort of like Jaden Daniels has just risen, like this meteoric rise, JJ McCarthy in at 1-8. Why do you think, not only since October, but really since the combine, what has happened to JJ McCarthy and why are people all of a sudden taking him in the first round?
I think people have got to talk to him. I think that's his biggest selling point from what we read, is what's between his ears. Like, he's that kind of archetypal leader. People gravitate towards him. People are coming out of that Michigan locker room, and in all their interviews, like, people are asking questions. Well, what was JJ McCarthy like? And they're saying, he's the man. Like, you know, he's as good as advertised. And there is going to be that question, isn't there? Of course there's going to be that question about the little production and the fact that when they had to, Michigan land on the running game rather than trusted his arm. Like, there was the entire fourth quarter of one game where he didn't throw a passage, you know? And it was really interesting. Like, when you watch the All-22, like, there are games where you just see him handing the ball off. Like, significant. I know he hands a mean ball off. Like, he does it as well as anybody. He's had a lot of practice. But, you know, the people that have played with him day in, day out, and trained with him and scrimmaged with him have said, like, you know, he can make the throws. We just didn't need him to. And at Michigan this year, it was all about us winning, not throwing games away. Now, that just says to me, like, the control of your personality to be able to kind of take that mantle, knowing that it could potentially affect your draft stock, and ride it through, never sulk, never whinge, you know, and be that leader, then no wonder people gravitate towards him. You know, but it ultimately does leave the question, doesn't it? Like, can he, at the next level, put a team on his back and win games? Will he be a dynamic fantasy contributor? Or, you know, is he going to be a game manager? Now, you look at the kind of career arc of somebody like Jared Goff and say, well, actually, if he could do that, well, then he's going to be a great super flex player for a long time. But you definitely wouldn't want him as that kind of top 12 quarterback. But in your super flex leagues, there's the have and the have nots at quarterback, isn't there? Like, we all know that. And taking a punt here on a kid who's got the potential in the long term to be a top 24 QB and fill one of those super flex spots just means that somebody else hasn't got him, for one. And two, it gives you the opportunity to recycle and choose what you're going to do with the rest of the guys on your roster.
And yeah, at this stage as well, if you're thinking, oh, I won't draft JJ McCarthy because he's not going to be a top 12 quarterback, you're picking up 1-8. I think to get someone that could be that sort of game manager, steady quarterback too, to get that person towards the back end of the first round in your rookie picks here, that's a slam dunk. Like, yeah, if you could have got Jared Goff at 1-8, you'd be delighted right now, right?
Absolutely. And you don't want to be, you know, if you're picking at 1-8, like you said, the likelihood is you're not in desperate need of a quarterback. You've got actually the luxury of taking a guy, which is brilliant, because I don't think he's going to be perfect straight away. I think there's going to be quite a steep learning curve for him. And it doesn't look the way that hype's built up that he's going to get the opportunity to sit behind someone. But I would perhaps, you know, be drafting him, very comfortable in drafting him, if I know that I've got perhaps two older, steady heads playing quarterback and super flex for me. Because if I was relying on him to contribute too much straight away, I could perceive a situation where I've actually got a top four pick next year, potentially. But that doesn't mean I don't think he's going to be great in the long term.
Minnesota Vikings? What do you think?
I mean, it seems like a kind of foolproof scheme. They've got a great setup for somebody to walk into. Outside of the Chicago Bears, they must have the best setup for a quarterback to walk into. They've got the tackles in place. It means they can pay the other JJ. Obviously, they've got a great wide receiver too as well in Addison. They've got the tight end when Hawk's back fit. Everyone seems to be forgetting about him at the moment, ADP-wise in startup drafts, but we're not here to whinge about that one. He'd be walking into a great situation and one where he could be successful without a doubt.
I didn't even think about that JJ and JJ, right? That's easy. It writes itself, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. So moving from 1-8 into 1-9, you had Bo Nix out of Oregon here at 1-9 in October. You switched it up a little bit. You've even switched positions. You've gone back to the LSU wide receiver well. You've gone to Brian Thomas Jr. or Thomas the Tank Engine, as I would call it.
Yeah, listen, I'll be completely honest. I'm not Brian Thomas's biggest fan. I think I made that clear when we did the wide receiver review on the Dynasty show a few weeks back. I think I said he looks like Taz and plays like Jane. You know, he does, however, have a malleable skill set, a skill set that can be developed. What he does right now, he does very, very well in running nines and kind of post routes and kind of blowing the doors off people with his speed. If you can let him do that early, you've got the time to work with him on the underneath stuff and the kind of short to intermediate game, because he's got the potential. It's just not been farmed out of him yet, because he's not had to do it until this year when he's burst out onto the scene at LSU. And I just think age, talent, potential. Again, if you're in the 109, you can afford to swing for upside. So why not take a kid that's absolutely full of it?
Yeah, you're right. That's what it's all about at 109. You're not going to get any bulletproof prospects. So, yeah, swing for the fences, and a guy with the athletic upside of a Brian Thomas Jr., I think it's well worth that pick at 109. So I absolutely love that. And moving on to 110, we had another guy who has decided not to come out in Quinn Ewers. We'll see him next year around the top of the draft, probably. And you've gone for Trey Benson out of Florida State, the running back. Talk to me about Trey Benson and why. Is he your first running back off the board, Phil?
He is, and I'm going to put a caveat on this. This is me putting my draft guru head on and saying that the Cowboys take him day two. Because the Cowboys are in desperate need of a running back, and the running back in that system gets fed like a workhorse. And if Trey Benson ends up there, I think at the moment you're probably seeing him in most drafts around the 203 to 205 range. But if this is the play, you know, because ultimately, like I said, they need a running back. They will take one, I'm sure, day two. If this is the play, he will take an immediate skyrocket up the kind of draft boards because people know that he's going to get the rock and he's going to get it often.
Do you do this to any, let's say you get like Blake Corum or you get any of these other guys end up going to the Cowboys, do they automatically become your running back one if the Cowboys take someone in that slot in the second round? Is that your running back one in this class?
So we should never read too much into landing spot, but at the end of the day, when it can be a great separator, when we acknowledge that all the guys are really closely graded this year. Like, so for example, like, you know, if we take Bijan, Bijan's the RB1 in that class, and in any class, it's not swapping because somebody else lands up in a better situation. Like, we're not playing that game, but what we're doing is when we've got guys, you know, separated by point one of a point, or what, you know, whatever kind of closeness it is on the scale that you use to kind of grade players and prospects, landing spot can be a differentiator. And for me, I think it gives an immediate boost to somebody in that room. And like I say again, if you're at the 1-0-10, you made the playoffs last year, you're a good team. Yeah. You just need the boost of some immediate production. And do I love him? No. Do I think he's the perfect prospect? I don't think he's the best running back in the class. I think he's going into it healthy, which is the big separator from the guy I think really is the best running back in the class. Mm. And yeah, like I say, he's going to get fed. He should be well rested. He should be really well rested because he went missing in the second half of the season for Florida State when they needed him most. You know, after Jordan Travis went down, they really needed to lean on him, and he never kind of broke out in the way that we hoped he would. But he's got a three-down skill set, and I can just see this falling into place. So it's based on that, really.
Yeah, he's in a tier of three for me right at the very top, and I think I'd just take whoever gets the best landing spot of him and Brooks and Jalen Wright as well, who we might get to later. I don't know. I've not seen the full list. We might get to Jalen Wright later. Who knows? But you had Xavier Worthy sitting in at 111 this time, last October. And now you've swapped up Ladd McConkey, who you mentioned earlier. What has Ladd McConkey done to bring you all the way? I suppose get healthy and start playing. That helped.
That absolutely. Listen, McConkey is my guilty pleasure in this class. I if this is higher than other people are taking him, I'm fine with him, because if I'm picking at the 111, I mean, there's no way he's coming back to me. And there's always that certain time, go get your guy. What does it matter if it's 1-2 spots? Go get your guy. And McConkey is my guy in this class. I genuinely believe he's going to be a better pro than college receiver. I think he's going to profile as a Z, which means there'll be somebody else taking that double coverage a lot of the time, which will allow him to do the kind of dirty work underneath. You know, he's not scared of going and getting stuck in that kind of middle part of the field. And he just does, again, he does everything so tightly. I'm a sucker for good route running, and he's there with the best of them. You know, the way he moves, the way he cuts, it's just so fun to watch. It just kills me that from an NFL draft perspective, he's not the kind of profile of player that the Baltimore Ravens need, because I'm going to have to watch him somewhere else and root for him somewhere else.
Yeah, for me, he's the number one best route runner in this class. I just love watching him play. I see like little snippets of like a Devonta Smith sometime watching him run routes, which I just love about him. I mean, I'm a sucker for Devonta Smith. So whenever I see little snips like that from Ladd McConkey, I just love it. And in today's NFL, we've seen as they're, you know, without, you know, sounding too much like old man yells at cloud, taking away the physicality a little bit, these small guys can win, and they can win by getting open. And Ladd McConkey 100% can get open at the next level. So I love taking him there. I'd pick 111. So rounding out the first round, you had, hey, look at that rocket, Raheem Sanders. What the hell happened to that guy? He's at 112. And you've swapped in Xavier Worthy instead, who just blew everybody away at the combine.
Yeah, so Raheem Sanders, first of all, like, did not have the year he was hoping to have. No. In fact, like, and I still think, in spite of that, he may have stood a better chance coming out in this class. Because
did he transfer somewhere weird?
He has. He's gone from Arkansas to South Carolina, which seems like a real kind of sideways at best step for him. But, you know, he'll have an agent. He'll have people working with him that were giving him the feedback that last year hadn't gone the way he wanted, and he wasn't going to get perhaps the draft capital he wanted. So that decision's been made, and, you know, good luck to him. I think he's going to get well and truly lost in the shuffle. Behind some of the really talented running backs in the 2025 class. When's too early to do a too early for 2025 mock, by the way?
Can we do it like even before like before the NFL draft? We can get right in. Like, I'm ready to talk about Luther Burden. I've been waiting for ages.
But no, listen, like I said, Raheem Sanders is going to find himself on the outside looking in potentially in this next crop of running backs as well. So good luck to him. But let's focus on Xavier Worthy. Blew the doors off at the combine. 4-2-1, you know, and every time I think to myself, well, could he just be John Ross? Could he just be a guy that runs really fast in his pants? I go and I watch the clip of that whip route he runs on a fourth down touchdown against Iowa State. I could just watch that on repeat again, again, and again from now until the end of time because it was filthy. And it just shows, like, he can run routes as well. He's not just a one-trick pony. You know, he will get typecast. I think this is the right range for him because there are limitations to his game as well. But yeah, at the 112, again, why not? Swing for someone with an elite skill at something, hoping that the team he ends up with uses him well.
You know, it's weird. The John Ross comparisons only actually come up after he beat John Ross's record. Like, if he ran like a 4.29, nobody would be saying, what if he's just John Ross? Like, it'd just be like, wow, that's really fast. Good for him. He's a good player. He's a good prospect. But since he beat John Ross, everyone's been saying, what if he's this? What if he's that? I think what really speaks to him is that whenever we did this in October, you had him around this spot anyway. You had him at 111. He's now sitting at 112. So he's obviously a great talent and has that, you know, super elite level speed to go along with it as well, which is you just love to see. I can't wait to see where he ends up. But he's ended up at the back end of the first round for you here, Phil. And as we headed to round two, we're gonna go through picks 201, 202, and 203 in a row, and then we'll maybe focus in on one in particular and you can chat about that player. So let's have a little look at round two. At 201 in October, you had Troy Franklin. You decided to swap in Adonai Mitchell. At 2-2, Michael Penix Jr. staying at 2-2. And then at 2-3, you had Blake Corum. You've switched it over, and you've gone with Jonathan Brooks. You know what? Jonathan Brooks, haven't really spoken about him too much on the show, outside of he's injured. But for me, if Jonathan Brooks wasn't injured, he's the slam dunk RB1 in this class.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And isn't it funny that, like, we're really mindful at wide receiver of one-year production and one-year breakouts. Like, that ends up being a ding on people, and we start saying, well, they've only done it for 1 year, oh, and we start looking for all these stats that tell us the story we want, right? Yet Jonathan Brooks only really burst onto the scene this year because last year he was buried behind Bijan, he was buried behind Roshan Johnson. So he's only really kind of broken onto the scene this year. But my God, he was the best back in college football, hands down, before his injury. You know, in the running game, in the passing game, he could do a bit of absolutely everything. And he was looking like a legit talent. And, you know, from what I understand, I'm no medical expert, as I'm sure you know. If you wanted to try it, I could perform surgery and see how it goes. You know, but from what we're hearing, his knee injury was a clean injury. He's hoping, he's already making noises about being ready for training camp, but I think a lot of them say that regardless of, you know, things at this time of season to kind of boost the draft stock slightly. But again, you can afford to wait on him. You can afford to wait on him, stick him on IR, let him get healthy, you know, and when he comes back, he will be an immediate boost to your running back room, no doubt about it.
What I love about him is actually I secretly love that he was kind of buried behind Bijan and Roshan last year and the last few years because actually he's coming in to the NFL with so much tread still in the tires. He's not like a Najee Harris coming in who was so beaten up already, and that's why we see Najee feeding already in his NFL career. I think he's got tons and tons still to give, which is brilliant for a running back.
That's it. That's it. You know, get him in. Sit him on your IR spot. If he doesn't play all year, it really doesn't matter to you. Put it in the chamber for next year. Break him out when he's ready. You know, if in case of emergency, smash glass, and he'll come in and he'll do the job for you, no problem.
Yeah, absolutely agree with Jonathan Brooks. So let's skip ahead and let's have a look at picks 4, 5, and 6 then. So last year at 204, you had Jatavion Sanders, his teammate there at Texas. This year you've swapped in Troy Franklin. Then back in 2023, you had Romo Odunze down at the 2-5. Obviously, he skyrocketed up. You've swapped in Bo Nix for this year. And then back in October, you had Will Shipley running back out of Clemson in at the 2-6. And you decided to put in Blake Corum instead. Let's have a little chat maybe about Troy Franklin out of Oregon, Phil, because he's someone he's fallen down a little bit in most people's draft boards, right? Do you think that's because of the combine, or is that more people just moving ahead of him?
So there's two things to this, right? First and foremost, he didn't test fantastically. And then secondly, I do think there are still some doubts long-term about that Oregon offense and its translatability to the NFL. It was a lot of one read, two reads, and gone. Like, the very, very rarely looking past the second read. And he did a great job of getting himself open on that first read. But they were they're not scheme touches as such, but they were one and two step, very quick, bang, bang plays designed for him to get that yard of space and show what he can do. And I just question its translatability at the next level and whether he can be physical enough to get off press coverage at that next level if he's not the first read. You know, if he's the second, third, crikey, maybe even fourth progression in a play, is he going to be effective at getting open and getting off those blocks? It remains to be seen because he's not been asked to do it. I do think at this stage, he's still a really, really good value at the 204 because he is talented. We've seen what he can do with the ball in his hands. It's just how open he can get. And then again, you know, other guys have stepped up. A.D. Mitchell has stepped up and is now at the 201 spot. You know, we've talked about Ladd McConkey is another one who stepped up above him. Brian Thomas, again, has come out of nowhere to end up above him. People had him as the kind of, had Franklin as the wide receiver 4. To be the wide receiver 7, 8 in this class is no knock on anybody particularly. It just shows how stacked this class is. And at 204, someone's going to be really, really happy to get a guy they know that was a likely first rounder less than a year ago.
Yeah, this is like someone you could pair up, get Malik Nabers and Troy Franklin here and completely revamp your wide receiver room in just one draft. You're right. I'm really glad you mentioned that. I was going to say it just speaks to how good this wide receiver class is whenever you have someone like a Troy Franklin who, you know, in a lot of other years would be someone we would see go back into round one, getting pushed all the way back to 204. So I love second round picks in this draft, actually. Bit of a shame because I just seem to never have any second round picks for whatever reason. But I love them in this class in particular, getting guys like Franklin. So we've had a look at all the way up to 206, I believe. Yeah, we have. So let's have a look at 7, 8, and 9, shall we? So at 207, hey, there's Trent Benson. He was there in October. You've put Breelan Allen in there this time around. Here we had Antoine Juice Wells. Yes, had him there in October. You've swapped in Xavier Leggett. And then we had Keon Coleman at the 2-9, which you have swapped in Jalen Wright. Let's have a chat about, we haven't really spoken about a guy like Xavier Leggett who, I mean, I can't quite realize by October if he had started to slow down then, but he came out with like blazes coming out of his heels at the start of the college season. He was leading college in yards, but he kind of tailed off a little bit, right?
Yeah, but so did South Carolina. Like the whole offense just kind of fell off a cliff towards the back end of the season. Absolutely no fault of his and no fault of Spencer Rattlers, who doesn't make this draft, but he's another one that I'm really pulling for, you know, outside of these kind of top two rounds. But one man's opportunity is another man's, one man's loss is another man's opportunity in the instance of these two, because they were both playing at South Carolina together. Antoine Juice Wells, anybody who knows me by now knows I'm a huge, huge fan. Absolutely love him from his story to his draft prospects. Yeah. And to the player, I think he's phenomenal. And I do think, side note, I think he's made a great decision to transfer to Ole Miss this year and go play with Jackson Dart. He was banged up last year, which massively hindered his draft stock. He's made the decision to go back to college. He's going to go to Ole Miss. He'll play with Jackson Dart in Lane Kiffin's offense. And I think he's going to have a very, very good season. Watch out for him as a late first rounder, early second rounder. Next year
they've got Trey Harris as well at Ole Miss. They've kept him, that's real nice.
But Xavier Leggett stepped in when Juice Wells went down and really emerged as an absolute freak. You know, he's height, weight, speed combo, that kind of prototypical boundary guy. What I really like is people think because of his size, he's just going to be a jump ball guy. But actually, when you watch him sink his hips in his roots and change direction, he's really, really fluid. He's got a bit of everything, and he's a name that is so polarizing because we I mentioned a few minutes ago, like, we hate this idea of fifth year breakouts or one season of production because people have been burnt before. But I saw something interesting on X earlier, and I can't remember who it was. If I could remember, I'd give them the credit for it. But they kind of said, like, why don't you flip this on its head? Instead of looking at, oh, yeah, he's only had 1 year's production, look at it like, who cares that it was his fifth year? He's had a year where he rocked up nearly 1,400 receiving yards in the SEC. Like, that doesn't happen by accident. That happens because somebody is a damn good football player. Yeah,
that was at Hot Seat Mag said that, by the way.
Was it? Okay. Yeah, I'll give you the credit.
I'll take it though.
Yeah, but it's a really interesting point. Like I said earlier, like that 1 year production scares people because they've been burnt before, but that doesn't mean we tar everybody with the same brush. When you look at his story and you look at the adversity he's faced, you know, if I'm not mistaken, spells have been homeless and this, that, and the other. Him now looking at, there's a lot of buzz about him going to the Chiefs, isn't there, Max, at 32, you know? He would be phenomenal, and yeah, I'm really pulling for him, and to get him at 208 feels really, really good. Be patient with him, you know. I think any owner that drafts him needs to know that it might not all click straight away. But you're drafting him in a spot where that's absolutely fine. You know, take your time with him, look after him. If you've got a decent roster, don't be afraid to stick him on your taxi squad for a year while he figures some things out. He's going to make a difference for you in the long term.
Yeah, I think you're right. Just a perfect guy, just to have in that taxi squad, and someone who can go halfway through the season. It's like, oh, I've got Leggett. Sweet. I can move him up. He might take a little while to get the wheels turning a bit. But yeah, I think Xavier Leggett's a real, real nice player who you can do multiple things for your offense as well. He's not, you're right, not just a big jump guy. He's even shown a few times he can play like that big slot role as well, which is obviously great for Dynasty, getting all of those PPR points. So I can't wait to see where he ends up. So let's have a little look. We got three more people. We got at 210, 211, and 212. So we had Riley Leonard, who's mom texts him before every game, "You suck," to hype him up, which is absolutely brilliant. You had him in there. He's decided to transfer in. He's taken Hartman's place at Notre Dame.
He has.
You have swapped in Marshawn Lloyd at the 210 this time around. At 211, you had Blake Corman's teammate, Donovan Edwards, who you've now swapped in Bucky Irving at the 211. And at 212, you had Johnny Wilson, the for now wide receiver, who was coming out of Florida State, and you've decided to swap in, hey, Ricky Pearsall. Let's chat about Ricky Pearsall, Phil, because he's someone that I've seen quite a lot of hype start to build up online about. Why do you think people are starting to warm up to Ricky Pearsall, apart from that amazing catch he had this season?
I mean, that is... He's done it more than just that one that went viral. Like, he seemed to have a catch like that most weeks. You know, this is going to sound stupid. He's not going to be Odell Beckham, but he has those same kind of sticky hands that you can just rely on in any situation. He's not as quick as Beckham was in his prime or anything like that. So temper expectations there, but the sticky hands and the ability to be a quarterback safety blanket is going to make him really, really popular wherever he ends up. He's a name that's generating a lot of buzz because of how friendly he is in terms of what he can do for your quarterback and where he can win, and the fact that those hands are so reliable.
And yeah, he was. I don't want to speak too out of turn because I've not really done a huge amount of study on him, but I believe it was Mertz at Florida. Did not look good to me.
Nope.
Did not look good to me at all. So he was dealing with not great quarterback play, in my opinion.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, let's put it this way. Mertz is still at Florida and is going to lose his job to a talented freshman, talented incoming freshman. That doesn't happen as much as you'd think in college football. The guy who's got the job tends to age out and keep the job. unless there's someone outstanding beneath him. But Mertz has just shown that he wasn't getting it done. Yet Pierce still seemed to bail him out at least once or twice a game with a catch he had no business making. Working back to the ball as well. So when a player wasn't quite where it needed to be and went off timing, really, really good job of working back. And that, to me, you know, screams, can the Ravens get him in the second round? He's generating enough buzz to make me think that I think the Ravens pick at 62. He'll likely be gone. We might have to trade up in the second or back in the first if we back out of the first if we want him. But the way Lamar Jackson plays on players that break down, at scrambling and looking to keep, you know, he doesn't just look to take off and run anymore. He's going to scramble. He's going to hold the ball and he's going to wait for one of his receivers to break free. He's got that good relationship with Zay Flowers. Mark Andrews does it incredibly well. Rashad Bateman's probably the one that stands out like a sore thumb at the moment because he doesn't do that as well. Ricky Pearsall is another guy who will work back to the ball and work for you in those players that break down. I'd love to see him in Baltimore.
Yeah, I think that would be a real, real nice fit for him. And sort of mentioned Johnny Wilson there while he's on the screen, may as well talk about it. Do you think is he going to play tight end?
Do you know what? This comes down to one thing. Like, I haven't got time to figure out what other people are going to do with him. Yeah. Like, he's too slow to be a wide receiver at the next level. He's just massive. Like, I mean, look at that catch radius in that shot. That catch radius is outstanding. But he's going to struggle to get open. He's going to struggle to separate. He might make the shift to tight end, I don't know. Can he block? Can he block to the level that an NFL tight end would need to? You know, Darren Waller did it. I mean, Darren Waller's a success story for that positional move. He started as at the Baltimore Ravens as a wide receiver, got cut loose, and then the Raiders turned him for that kind of shortish stint into one of the best tight ends in the game. Like, that is the dream situation for Johnny Wilson. However, I am not drafting him to sit and wait and figure that out. Like, he can be somebody else's problem.
Yeah, I actually, unlike Waller, actually Wilson is, and I use this term obviously sitting in my attic, you know, not anywhere as close to this, but I think Johnny Wilson's a bad athlete. I would go that far to say that.
Yeah, I think I'd go with you, and that's coming from me who's still got my hamstring taped up from struggling to manage an amateur game of football.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you with the amateur football. You need to be careful of those hammies for sure, Phil. So thank you so much for coming back onto the show, Phil, and reviewing some of those picks that you did back in October. But I can't let you go before chatting about everybody's favorite topic. Do you have any sleeper players that you never got to talk about, never got to mention, that are flying a little bit under the radar?
Yeah, so I'm really interested to see what happens with Javon Baker.
Yes.
Again, you talk about route running and you talk about good hands. Like, he ticks a lot of boxes for the type of wide receiver I like. And at the moment, his range of outcomes seems to be everything from the second round down to the fifth. You know, just kind of chuck it up there and see where it lands. There's no real consensus. Some people are saying he's going to be a darling and go high. Other people are saying he's going to go low. The other one for me, and I've always get his name in the wrong order, Marcus Jacksemi Rosen from Georgia. I really like him. He's going to be a day three guy. And he's the type of player, again, good profile to be a better, bigger bodied pro than he perhaps was in the collegiate game, particularly in Georgia's offense, where Brock Bauer got the majority of the targets and then McConkey tended to sweep up what was left. I think he's going to go on and be a good wide receiver at the next level. And I actually, if I'm in deep leagues where there's a fifth round of Devy picks, of rookie picks, I'll maybe take a flyer on him there. But I would also be looking at clearing the dead weight out of my taxi squad. That's never going to be anything. Now I've still got Jalen Tolbert in far too many places. I'll be clearing him out, and if he goes undrafted, looking to put Jacksemi Rosen in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Is it Rosemary Jackson? It might be Rosemary Jackson. I'm not sure. Yeah, you're right. You've not got me questioned as well. Have I done it in the wrong order as well? Tell me, actually, Phil, while I have you, you'd be a good person to ask. I was recently on another podcast, and we were chatting about potential round one wide receivers. That's quite hard to say, my goodness. In the NFL draft, Jermaine Burton's name come up. You're obviously a fan of Jermaine Burton, right?
Yeah, big Alabama fan. And again, we get into what people refer to as silly season. Yeah. People are looking for stories. They're looking for reasons to separate players. And all of a sudden, this narrative about him being unreliable, red flags, character concerns, like are popping up more and more and more. And I think they're massively overblown. He's played very well at two of the biggest programs in college football, in Georgia and then transferring to Alabama. He transferred to Alabama at a tough time. Alabama lost the class that had Mac Jones, Jameson Williams, etc. They all kind of went to the NFL. And Jermaine Burton came in to lead the wide receiver room. He did it quietly, went about his business, became a reliable target for Jalen Milroe. And really did a good job over two seasons. There's then just that sticking point. People want to keep bringing up this issue that happened at Tennessee. Tennessee won in the last moment against Alabama for the first time at their place in God knows how many years, because it doesn't happen very often. Fans stormed the field, as they're prone to doing in college football. And some TikTok personality. Is that a thing? A TikToker?
Kind of
had a phone in his face, and whether they goaded him or not is open to whoever you want to believe. But if someone shoved a phone in my face as thousands of people are rushing the field, I'm not condoning what he did. But like, the story ranges from, did he put a hand in his face to push her away, to did he whack her one? Well, let's put it this way. I can't see for a moment him having smashed a one, because there's no way Nick Saban would keep him around. Like, he didn't even get a suspension. It came to nothing, which says to me the whole thing was blown well out of proportion. And we just seem to be in that time of the season where people are looking for a narrative and looking for another story. He's, again, not the quickest. Good hands, good, reliable pass catcher. And, yeah, he seems, again, to be a forgotten man in the mix and the shuffle of all the guys we've got this year.
Yeah, it just shows you. Yeah, you're right. There's so many wide receivers. There's just tons and tons and tons. And even like at the quarterback position, there's some more quarterbacks even that we didn't really get a full chance to chat about today. We mentioned them very briefly, like your Penixes and your Bo Nixes and all these guys. That it's just a great year if you're a rebuilding team, because you can load up on your cornerstone pieces at wide receiver and quarterback. So I think it's a brilliant, brilliant draft class. And Phil, I just want to say thank you so much for coming back onto the show. I find that super, super refreshing to see how far we've come since October. Can you just remind everybody, listen, where can they find all of your work online?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's my Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, at PoshPlaysFF. You can find me kind of pumping out the content for the Wildcard Devi crew at Wildcard Devi. And then a little bit of writing as well that's going on Substack at the moment for the brilliant Simo over at Brit Towers. Doing a lot of stuff for him at the moment. Still hoping to get a few pieces done as well for 5 Yard College as well, part of the 5 Yard Rush team. So really spreading myself to try and get myself out there. So any followers, any likes, you know, all welcome.
Absolutely. Make sure you're going over, checking out all of Phil's work. And hey, if you've made it this far and you've not hit that like and subscribe button, that would be absolutely lovely. And second episode of note, shout out to all you Podbean listeners. I think like 70% of all people listening are over on Podbean. So I don't know what you do over there, a thumbs up, a star, whatever. I'll take everything I can get. So how about we do that as well? So Phil, thank you once again for coming on to the show. Thank you everybody for listening. Remember, for anything Dynasty you need to know, keep it locked right here on the Certified Inferno. We'll see you next time.